It's Easter Sunday. It's the end of March. Easter Sunday, and it's the end of March. That doesn't kind of go, that doesn't make any real sense there. Easter Sunday, end of March. That's bizarre. Okay. I was looking at the lunar calendar or what have you, and it said that every so many years, 5 or 6 years, Easter is in March, but this is the first time I remember it being in March, because I'm just so used to it being April. I think it's usually it's going to be another 5 or 6 years, but it's weird. Weird. So, before April Fool's Day, it is Easter. It threw me for a loop. It threw me off. Two major holidays. Well, yeah, if you consider St. Paddy's Day a major holiday, but some people do, some people don't. It's just really weird. And, I'm here to talk. Get at least the second episode done before the end of March, before it's gone forever. And here I am talking about it. A couple things I'm going to go over in this episode. Louis Gossett Jr. And Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And first of all, I'll go into filmography a little bit of Mr. Lewis on the old IMDb. Because this man is a legend. Professional. Always got work. Well, it seemed like he did anyway. Let's see here. Lewis. Gossett. Gossett Jr. Unfortunately, nothing's coming up. Let me see here. Totally spelt that wrong. Let me just type in Iron Eagle. Sorry, I'm saying it wrong. Not Gossett. Gossett. Come on. Louis Gossett. Gossett Jr. Louis Gossett Jr. The man that's been with us for so long. And put in so many great performances. Always taking the work. And, you know, a constant working professional, man. For sure. A huge filmography. I'm looking at this sucker. Amazing. A presence. Always a presence in our cinema. And, of course, Iron Eagle's a big one, but he's always been in the background and or the foreground back in the day. Of course, his biggest role is, for an officer and a gentleman. I looked that up right now. Where he played a drill instructor. Marine. I believe a Marine drill instructor. And, yeah, it's sad. It's sad. It's our legends are going, and this is one of those guys that he always played the heavy, and he always gave a movie a groundedness, I'd say, like a really heavy groundedness to a film or into his role. A certain amount of seriousness. It's like, okay, he never got like, he didn't get like a whole bunch of big roles, like maybe in the 90s and the 2000s and whatnot, but he was always working. And you gotta give the man credit. He kept going, and he was always, I'm sure, a professional. Let me see. Let me look him. Let's look up the storyline of Officer and Gentleman. Zach Mayo is a young man who has signed up for the Navy Aviation Officer Candidate School. He is a Navy brat who has a bad attitude problem. Gunnery Sergeant Emil Foley is there to train and evaluate him and will clearly find Zach wanting. Zach meets Paula, a girl who's a little beyond family, who has a little beyond family. Well, that's a weird sentence. And must decide what it is he wants to do with his life. It's a good movie. It's the biggest thing about the movie. It's known for the song, "Love Lift Us Up Where We Belong" by Mr. Joe Cocker. And he sings it with somebody else. The song, I definitely knew the song before I saw the movie. I probably watched the movie for the first time, probably 10 years ago. I just never really got around to it, and but the thing is I can definitely identify with it because I was in the service. I was in the army there for a while, and so I can definitely relate to his struggle of. What's the next thing I got to do to move my life forward? And for me, it was going to school. And a lot of people that in the military are in kind of a dire situation, and they need to get out of a situation and use the military as kind of a stepping stone and to rebuild themselves from a bad situation, or they just really need to test themselves. A lot of people in the military are kind of, maybe kind of running away from bad situations, and I was kind of in a rocky situation. I won't go into that at home, and it was a transition time between finally getting out of a high school I hated and trying to get into a college that I liked, and the army was like a transition between those 2 points, and it fit in there pretty good, and it will test you. Definitely, it will test you. And Louis Gossett Jr., playing this drill instructor here to Richard Gere, it happens. It's Louis Gossett Jr. happens at trying to drill instructor, where he will t you know he tests the mettle of Richard Gere in this movie, and you will get your, it wasn't just one though. When I was in the army, it was a whole bunch of them with different personalities, which I could go into another whole podcast, for that, about my old drill instructors. That would be kind of fun. So yeah, let's go into this man's, let's see, IMDb here a little bit. And oh yeah, he was in Jaws, I think Jaws 3. Let's see here, that's another one I remember him in. No, it was Jaws, I think it was. Yeah, Jaws 3. Let's see. Yeah, Jaws 3D. And he plays one of the guys that are running the show in the underwater aquarium or whatever you call that thing that they had going on down there. But yeah, but he was always, Yeah, he was always a good heavy in whatever movie you're watching. Oh, Dogstown, that's a good one, the boxing one. Or Digstown, sorry, not Dogstown, Digstown. He played kind of a retired George Foreman-esque boxer. That was kind of like a comeback movie for him a little bit. This man won one Oscar. Let's see here. For Officer and a Gentleman, I believe. Let's see here, go through a little bit. We're losing legends, folks, and what legends are replacing them? They can't be replaced. They're all unique. They are unique people. And I'm looking through his photos here. Believe he was in his 80s. But man, the man had a long career. Definitely. Definitely one to be proud of. And I think the way he carried himself through probably the ups and downs in his career made all the difference. And he's definitely, when I get the gist of him, it's not whether you win or lose kind of thing, it's just how you show up for life. And this guy, the sense I got from him was that he always showed up, ready to play, you know? And I don't think the guy ever phoned it in, you know? Born in Brooklyn, all right? Brooklyn, New York. And poor man passed away the 29th in Santa Monica, California. Nickname was Lou. Yeah, of course. Here we go into the mini bio. Louis Gossett Jr. is one of the most respected and beloved actors on stage, screen, and television, and is also an accomplished writer, producer, and director. Off screen, he is a social activist, educator, and author dedicated to enriching the lives of others. Gossett was the first African American to win an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for his unforgettable performances as Drill Sergeant Emil Foley in Officer and a Gentleman. Among his other awards are for an Emmy for Outstanding Lead Actor for his portrayal of Fiddler in the groundbreaking ABC series Roots, Golden Globe for the Best Performance of an Actor in Supporting Role for Josephine Baker's Story, and Golden Globe for Officer and Gentleman. He's been a nominated for seven. He was nominated for seven Primetime Emmy Awards, three Golden Globes, an Academy Award, five Images Awards, two Daytime Emmy Awards. In 1992, received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Gossett was also received numerous has received numerous honors throughout his illustrious career. His film debut was in 1961 classic movie A Raisin in the Sun with Mr. Sidney Poitier, another legend. Other films include The Deep, Blue Chips, Daddy's Little Girl, Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married 2, Firewalker, Jaws 3D, Enemy Mine. Oh, Enemy Mine's great, with Dennis Quaid, who's still not up for any Oscars, and Iron Eagle. 1 through 4. I didn't know they made four of them, but hey, he showed up for all four, among many others. Television credits include Extent, Madame Secretary, Boardwalk Empire, Family Guy, I See the Man Always Getting Work, and ER. Among dozens of others, Gossett is the author of best-selling autobiography and Actor and a Gentleman. Yeah, I might have to read that book. In which he chronicles the challenges and triumphs of his 50-plus-year career. Gossett is recognized for as much of his humanitarian efforts as he is for the accomplishments as an actor. In 2006, Gossett founded the E-Racism Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to eradicating racism. The foundation provides young adults with tools to live in a racially diverse and culturally inclusive life. Programs focus on fostering cultural diversity historical enrichment education and anti-violence initiatives. Gossett was born in Brooklyn, made his stage debut when he was 17, and Take a Giant Step, which was selected as one of the 10 best Broadway shows of 1953 by the New York Times. He has two adult sons and resided in Malibu, California. Malibu's nice. Been there. Did a little bit of work there. But the kind of work I will not tell you about on this podcast. Let's see. who is Gossett Jr.? Don't worry, it's not dirty. Yeah, it's sad. His trademarks are, that's cool, trademarks are deep commanding voice, often plays military commanders and authority figures. Like I said, the heavy. Let's see here. He was named King of Brooklyn at the Welcome Back to Brooklyn Festival in 1990. And Gossett was drafted by the New York Knickerbockers. Knickerbockers. That's a tongue twister. Knickerbockers. I guess that's some kind of baseball team, I guess. I don't know. Oh, this is cool. He was originally cast as Gale Sayers in the television movie Brian's Song, 1971. It's a classic movie. Just, I believe that's James Caan and Billy Dee Williams, I believe. Just days before his shooting began, Gossett tore his Achilles tendon while working out for the film. That sucks. The student exec scrambled and quickly hired Billy Dee Williams as a replacement. Ah, Gossett, depressed over missing his shot, was promised by David L. Walper first great role that came along. About 6 years later, Walper called Gossett to play Fiddler in Roots. The enemy, I keep saying that. The Emmy award-winning role that made him a star. So yeah, there it is. What a class act. In his Oscar award-winning role in An Officer and a Gentleman in 82, after Jack Nicholson turned down the role, and none of the other actors who the producers wanted proved available at the time, screenwriter Douglas Day Stewart then did research on a Navy base in Pensacola, Florida, and found out the top drill instructors they had were African American. Upon realizing this, Gossett was cast in what is now arguably his best remembered role. Some roles just stand out. There's nothing you can do about it. Let's see. Quotes. His quotes. If a role isn't different, it's not worth doing. When I'm offered a role, I look at what I think I can do with it. I look to see if I can project myself into it. I can do more than anyone suspects. I pride myself on my versatility. It took 32 years of difficult parts, second leads, villains, and juveniles. The Oscar changed the quality of the roles I was being offered. The Lord may not come when you want him, but he's always going to be there on time. And filming Enemy Mind, which he plays as alien, he's great. He's great in that. I want to watch that. That's overdue. That's a good, they said a Star Trek episode is based on it. It's fantastic. It's right up there with like Last Starfighter for me. It was right around that kind of time. That was a challenge. I prefer challenge because when you've done that, you've done something. That was something where nobody could see my face or eyes. I was giving somebody a performance through that makeup. That was 6 months in Germany. A lot of pain in the eyes and stuff. Yeah, that's awesome. I highly recommend you see Enemy Mine. That I'm gonna watch that. I'm gonna see where it's where I can rent that. Or what an awesome movie. I think I watched that maybe once or twice, and I need to watch it again. So there you go, Mr. Louis Gossett Jr. We'll miss you, sir. You're a class act. And yeah, you will be missed, but your legend never dies. And so yeah, with that, I'll go into the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire review. And I went to go see this movie on the weekend. The thing is, it had such a soft opening. Like, I didn't even know that it was opening on Wednesday. The advertising budget for this movie was like, I don't know. They half-assed it, really. And, so there wasn't much hype, I thought, going into it, like, weeks before. Wasn't a lot of ads that I saw. And it was here before you know it. And I missed they had these popcorn traps. I would have bought, like, the trap that has a popcorn thing in it, bucket. How cool would that have been? And it's like only the first people that got in there on Wednesday night. Again, I didn't know it was opening. I didn't know they were giving out pins at the theater there. Oh, so annoying. And you know, the trap lights up, and it lights up the popcorn bucket. About $45 or something. Excuse me. So I had the toy. You could buy it as a separate toy. Ah, oh, so cool. Missed opportunity there. Nobody kind of... That's the thing. Nobody tells you about these things. They just, oh, by the way, sometimes they have them, sometimes they don't. And this one, they had really cool Ghostbuster stuff for sale at the theater. That sold out. Like the first day, probably. So anyway, I went in there and kind of low expectations. And I would say that the movie, with the exception of Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson being in a majority of it, met those low expectations. It met the low expectations. Not terrible, but it's bordering on terrible, this one. It's like, it's just annoying. It's, you know, the beginning had promise. You know, it's in New York, and the way they have the logo, they set up the Ghostbusters thing, and they have a quote by Robert Frost. And, but the thing is, this isn't going to be a very long review, because honestly, it's, for me, I don't know how rewatchable it is. There's a few good parts, but the beginning of the movie, you know, it's fine and everything. They're after this ghost that's like an escape eel fish, and that's fine. And they send a Ghostbusters trap drone after it. That's neat, and it's always great seeing Ecto-1 or the new Ecto-1 out and about. But the family, again, the fam. There's too many characters in this movie. The family doesn't really do it for me. The family dynamic. And they're not that funny. They're not really funny characters. And that goes for the podcast kid. Is just kind of, doesn't really do it for me. And the best thing about the movie was seeing Dan Aykroyd talk about getting interested in ghostbusting a little bit, getting a background on this ghost, this horned ghost, which is, this is going to be spoilers review, is trapped in this globe, this little metal globe, and he was helping out this king or something in, I don't know, Egypt or Saudi Arabia or something. And then it started getting too ambitious, like he wanted to take over, so he locked it up into the sphere, and it had been dormant for years and years. And it's cool animation. The animation background they did for it was neat. And Patton Oswalt Patton Aswald. Patton Aswald explains it. Patton Oswald explains it. He's like the expert on it. Which is fine. You know, he's fine. He does a good job on it. It's, again, I don't think they really needed him to be in it. I think really Ray could explain, you know, because since he knows such deep history about everything, with a little research, he could have gone into it, but okay. Yeah, the middle of the movie is it's cool. Like, I like that Ernie Hudson, you know, Winston is kind of expanding the Ghostbusters, and there's like a Q branch of the Ghostbusters. But again, the unfortunate thing is that, again, it introduces too many more characters that aren't needed in it. And I thought, you know, this movie, no. It's like, stop making it a drama. You know, and there's some funny parts in it, but not all the jokes hit. And that's mostly because you don't have improv actors, you know, comedic actors. Although Paul Rudd's fine, but again, Paul Rudd is just kind of Paul Rudd. He's not necessarily a comedic, a funny actor. I don't think he has background in improv. You know, he's an actor that needs a few lines given to him, and he can give them with like a charm. But that's about it. He doesn't have that many tools in his belt to come up with funny moments. And I think a lot of this is because the script isn't written by Harold Ramis. It's not written by Ivan Reitman or Dan, maybe a little bit Dan Aykroyd, but the script isn't, it felt like a first draft. And, you know, Bill Murray's in it, but he's in it the last 10 minutes. And he's got a good, you know, the best part is when he shows up and he gets, the best part of it, him is in the trailer. It's when he shows up and he grabbed a hidden drink in the lighthouse. And, yeah, you know, and he's kind of wearing his suit from Ghostbusters 1, like the big orange suit or whatever. And, yeah, you know, the movie happened. You know, I like the new Ghostbuster tech. You know, cards are punched, people punched in, lights are turned on. Slimer's really good. They did a good job on him, and there's a good gag where they're throwing something around, or this ghost escapes, and this ghost can go into inanimate objects and possess them and animate them, and it goes into the food, and the food slides down the table, and then Slimer just eats the food real quick out of nowhere, and he goes flying vertical, and so it possesses Slimer. And the thing is, it's like, there's a lot of missed opportunities. Like, this little ghost that gets away that possesses everything, it possesses Slimer, but we don't really see that. It's all off screen, and then it gets into another ghost. And then it gets into Ecto-1 and it possesses the car, which is a neat Christine kind of angle. Like a John Carpenter Christine thing. Like, they could have had a whole scene of them trying, of Ecto-1 being like a character and just doing stuff that it hates about the Ghostbusters and all sorts of kind of funny gags. Like, what if a car is alive for the first time, like it can express itself either by being possessed by a ghost, it can do all sorts of funny stuff, like play the radio and find words on the radio that it kind of says it doesn't like about Ray or yada yada, just, you know, shoot stuff at him in the car. There's a lot of neat stuff they could have done with that. The lion gets possessed in front of the library, which I've been to in New York City, is that library, and that was awesome. So the CG was pretty good there, and I like the idea of the lion come to life. That thing could have, you know, gone running around the city, That would have been neat. But they didn't do that. But I like that Ray's in it longer. You know, he's got more screen time. I like that Egon's in it longer. He's got more screen time. Bill Murray doesn't have as much. He's got more screen time than Afterlife than he did in Afterlife. So that's better. But the lines that he's given, like there's this scene where he's throwing pens at the guy when he's introduced that that he's I can't this actor who's in the Eternals, an Indian actor. He's like throwing pens at this guy, and then it's like, huh, why is he doing that? It's not really, I don't know. The lines, Bill needed the lines. And one of the good things I liked about this was Walter Peck is in the movie, and he's doing his best job in there to be like he's the mayor of New York in it, which is pretty funny. So he's got it's like his time to shine and really stick it to the new Ghostbusters, saying, you know, you're too young and you shouldn't be a Ghostbuster, you're causing damage in the city and all that. So that's cool. He gets a lot of screen time in the movie, which is good. I like that. So again, there's some good things in the movie. But there's just, you know, even the ghost, I like the horned ghost is kind of neat look. But they didn't really do that much as far as that ghost, his that Frost Ghost master plan. Like he blows up, he's able to explode the containment unit, and a whole bunch of ghosts escape. Which is like Ghostbusters 1. Again, they're kind of rehashing Ghostbusters 1. What about all those ghosts now that escaped? You know, there's a good amount of them in the containment unit that got away. And one of the things that the movie doesn't address, which maybe they should have, like what happens in the containment unit, like how they're just being stored there. Can they be stored there in the spirit world indefinitely? You know, they don't. Now, a lot of it should be up to our imaginations, but you know, it kind of addresses, tries to address that, but never really fully does. So, the lead character, played by McKenna Grace, I don't know if I'm saying her name right, but you know, she's 15 years old in it, and there's an implied. Kind of semi lesbian infatuation with a ghost in it, which I felt was inappropriate. Like, I don't understand this. Like, it's definitely there's a scene where they imply it heavily that she's got a crush on the ghost, but the ghost that they cast is looks like she's in her 20s. It's awkward, you know. I don't know why they needed to be in the movie. Like, it was pretty weak. They needed a better, strong hook for her character, because she's like yelled at by, you know, her mom, and she's like, "Oh, you can't be a Ghostbuster anymore." And then she goes into play chess at night, and that's where she meets the ghosts and everything. It's like you know, it could have been fine if they're just friends. That's fine. But I don't know why they had to push that angle. I thought that was awkward, like not appropriate for the age. It's really weird. But yeah. So anyway, this is worse than Afterlife, which I kind of enjoyed Afterlife, but I knew it was such heavy drama. It stylistically that changed a lot of it for me. And this is kind of a continuation with that, with some more attempts at humor. So I commend him for that. But unfortunately, I don't like the direction with these characters that the franchise is going, because the characters aren't really that funny. You know, they're kind of forgettable. I don't know. The mom seems to be nagging. McKenna Grace's character. It's just, that's not the movie I signed up for. Like, that seems like it should be a different movie. And, again, what they should have done, what they should do, just get some comedic actors. Get them from SNL, I wish there was a Canadian. There's got to be a Canadian comedy show that they could pull from Canadian comedic actors and have them all be in, be the new Ghostbusters, more or less. And they'll be older characters, but so what? You'll have the essence of that kind of comedic touch to it. And actually, really, they should take the real Ghostbusters cartoon, make that a live action recast, and have those actors play those same characters, because that cartoon really broke down the archetype of each character and made them look different but similar in ways to their movie counterparts, and it still worked. Like Ray has red hair, or I should say orange hair in the cartoon. Egon's got blonde hair, and they're different voice actors acting like those characters, and it worked. It worked. It was still funny. And the stories were really good, most of them. There's a reason why it was so popular for so long. And, they really carried the torch for Ghostbusters. I mean, they really did. And, of course, is it as good as the original? No, you can't. Not as good as the original actors and everything, but pretty darn good. And it stays true to the comedic roots of the movie while introducing and expanding the universe of Ghostbusters with different group ghosts and everything. So I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. And that's almost a mid to low 6, where it's like, yeah, there's some stuff in here, but they really dropped the ball. And it could have been a 7. It could have been a 7, but some of the choices that were made that were awkward, like I didn't understand why they did that, and with that age, it's bizarre, but anyway, great seeing Bill Murray again, Bill Murray, even if it was for 10 minutes, and some of the lines he said weren't the funniest, and which is disappointing, but at least he was there as Peter Venkman. So there's some parts in it that are worth watching. They're fun parts. And, I just wish they would kind of go in a different direction, like what I was saying here tonight. And, just the real Ghostbusters, And, gosh, if I had that franchise, I would really kick it. I would just crush it. It would be a home run. It'd be a grand slam for me, because I'm such a big fan growing up, and watched the cartoons, played the video games. I made a proton pack with a cardboard box and a wooden dowel rod with a bike handle on there. Put that sucker at the end of it and use that as a neutrino wand. It's fantastic. And that's the power of the imagination, kids. That's another podcast as well. But I'm going to wrap this up. It's my review. Hope everyone had a happy Easter. I had a great one. I made some eggs, colored eggs with my mom there. And shiny ones, the shiny eggs. And I went to church and cleaned my soul a little bit. And had some great food at a good restaurant by the water, by the lake. And thank my brother for that, and it was good, a good family dinner there. My aunt, my mom, my brother, and his wife, and so there you go. Everyone have a happy Easter, and have long days, pleasant nights. I'll be back soon, sooner than later, for the next pod, possibly GoldenEye.